Good morning. As you can see, I don't have a Mother's Day message this morning, and that was not by design. It was by accident. I usually don't go by topical messages, so, you know, if it's Mother's Day, I usually don't worry about it. But we, as a ministry team, have been talking about preaching through a book together again. We haven't done that for several years, and it seems to be kind of all of our books that we've been going through, our things that we've been preaching on are all kind of coming to an end at the same, and I thought it might be a good time to do something like that again. And a couple weeks ago, Trevor and I were discussing, so how ours are going to, how many messages does he have left in his series, and how many do I have in mine? And I'm like, I have a great Mother's Day message coming right up, but I'm not going to be preaching on Mother's Day. Proverbs 31, you know, it's perfect. But I'm not going to be preaching on Mother's Day. And I thought, well, maybe I should just tell Todd I'll trade with him. No, I'm not going to mess up the schedule. I'm not going to do any of that. So the weeks go on, and last week happened, and thank you, Mar, very much for covering for me. We decided to go see Todd in Oregon. Trevor and I, we did that this coming week. So we didn't come back till Tuesday. I didn't go back to work till Wednesday. This coming Tuesday, we have open house. So I come back to work, and I'm going like mad. And yesterday, about 2 o'clock, my oldest daughter comes to me and says, "Do you remember tomorrow's Mother's Day?" I said, "No, it's not." Pretty confident. "No, it's not, because I don't preach on Mother's Day, and I'm preaching tomorrow." And she said, "It's Mother's Day tomorrow." And what's funny to her is that I didn't say, "Oh, I forgot to get Mom something." I said, "I'm preaching the wrong message." But at 2 o'clock on the Saturday before I preached, for me, doesn't work to switch gears. So this morning, you're going to get the message that I guess you're supposed to get. And Proverbs 31 will wait. But this is, I was so excited that there could be a possibility that I could actually preach it, the message that would go with, you know, whatever's happening that day. But it's not happening, and I'm guessing the Lord has a reason for that. So this morning, we're going to look at something that's, I don't know if it's hard. Yeah, it's hard. It's something that I really haven't looked at before, but it's the wise man versus the scoffer. How do we respond to different things? How does the scoffer respond to something? How does the wise man respond to a rebuke? Actually, in correction is the biggest thing we're going to focus on today. And then we're going to look at the 7 attributes of a wise man that go along with that. So if you want to turn to Proverbs 9 with me, verses 1 through 12 is what we're going to be looking at today. Talking about wisdom again. Talking about the way of wisdom, first of all. "Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her 7 pillars. She has slaughtered her meat. She has mixed her wine. She has also furnished her table. She has sent out her maidens. She cries out from the highest places of the city. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. As for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, 'Come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding.' He who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself, and he who rebukes a wicked man only harms himself. Do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and the years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself, and if you scoff, you will bear it alone." And we see her wisdom. Wisdom has done her due diligence. She's made everything ready for the man to come and to dine on wisdom. So I want to jump down. We're going to look at verse 7. This is where we're going to start today. The correction on the scoffer. How does the scoffer respond to correction? And it says, "He who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself, and he who rebukes a wicked man only harms himself. Do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you." So the scoffer, the man who makes fun of things, the mocker, probably going to be making fun of your religion, mocking your religion, mocking lots of things in life. If we try to correct him, he will hate you. Correct there has the idea of to reprove or to chastise, to instruct. Rebuke has the idea also to chasten, to correct, to dispute. It has the idea of telling them their faults, telling somebody their faults. So if you tell a wicked man his faults, he might harm you. Correction and rebuke will make the scoffer angry and upset. Yet Proverbs 24:24 tells us that it shouldn't keep us from doing it when necessary. And you know, in any and all circumstances, as I was thinking about this, talking about rebuke, because we're talking a lot about rebuking today, this is something that is done in love and compassion, which is what we often don't see. Often I wait to rebuke my children until I'm too upset to be kind and compassionate. I should have taken care of it a long time ago so that it doesn't happen, so that it's taken care of in a better way. And when we talk about rebuke today, it's about doing this with love and compassion. You know, so often it's not what we say. We often say the right thing, but we say it in the wrong tone of voice. Have you ever done that? Have you ever experienced that? How many of your children you said, hey, I need you to go do something. Okay. They said the right thing, right? But totally the wrong tone of voice. You can tell what's on the inside by the tone of voice. And this is, when we talk about rebuke today, godly wisdom and rebuke with wisdom, it's about doing it with love and with compassion. Proverbs 24:24 says, he who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the people will curse, nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. And we see, looking at our circumstances around us today, in the world today, we see so many people saying that what you're doing is right. The wickedness is right. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him will the people curse in the long term, in the end. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. Even though often as individuals, or that individual person that gets rebuked will become angry at us, we still need to address the wicked things that are going on around us. The scoffer. Some other verses in Proverbs. And again, I have an overhead today. I almost forgot to give it to the guys in the back. Sorry about that. Thanks for covering for me there. Put up other verses that talk about wisdom, talk about scoffers and how they respond to these things in Proverbs. So Proverbs 15:12 says, a scoffer does not love one who corrects him, which we had just heard, nor will he go to the wise, which is another, actually a big deal, I believe. The company you keep matters, and a scoffer will not seek out wise company. That tells you what kind of company he will keep. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. And Proverbs 22:24-25, which we just read some of that. No, we read Proverbs 24. This is Proverbs 22, verses 24-25. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and are set a snare for your soul. So the scoffer does not love one who corrects him, nor will he go to the wise. So we know he's not making friends with those that will help him make good choices. Somebody says this, tell me with whom you associate, and I will tell you who you are. That's very true. Tell me with whom you associate, and I will tell you who you are. And the scoffer has nothing to do with the wise man. Misery and joy are very contagious. So be mindful of the company you keep. Misery and joy are very contagious. So be mindful of the company you keep. Proverbs 12:1, whoever loves instruction loves knowledge. But he who hates correction is stupid. When I read that the first time, I said, is that word in the Bible? My mom said, I can't say that word. My wife says that too. But whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. Or King James would say brutish or dumb as an ox. It's kind of what the connotation of the word is there. Matthew Henry says this, those show themselves not only void of grace, but void of common sense, that take it as an affront to be told of their faults. Listen to this, because we're gonna get to us. We're gonna get to the wise man, supposedly the wise man, and how he responds to correction. So listen to this. But void of common sense, that takes it as an affront to be told of their faults, and an imposition upon their liberty to be put in mind of their duty. He that hates reproof is not only foolish, but brutish, which is the word that King James Version uses. Like the horse and the mule that have no understanding, or the ox that kicks against the goad. Those that desire to live in loose families and societies, where they may be under no check, that stifle the convictions or their own consciences, and count their enemies that tell them the truth, are the brutish here meant. So those of them that don't want to know knowledge, who hate correction, which is opposite of the wise man, as we see in the last part of verse 8. It says, rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. So we see here the same circumstance, the same thing happening. Do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Same circumstance, same thing happening, totally different response, totally different attitude. Tell a wise man his faults and he will love you? How many of you love the people that tell you your faults? That's a big knock for me. Tell a scoffer his faults and he will hate you. David is an excellent example of this. You know, we often talk about David having a heart of a man after God's own heart. And the more I read about David, the more I see that. It comes out in different things. And so looking at Psalms 141, this is a psalm of David. I'm going to read the first five verses of Psalm 141. Lord, I cry out to you. Make haste to me. Make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry to you. Let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Do not incline my heart to do any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men who work iniquity, and do not let them eat their delicacies. And here's the part that really sticks out to me. Let the righteous strike me. It shall be a kindness. And let him rebuke me. It shall be as excellent oil. Let my head not refuse it. And we see David doing that. And we see, and we'll come to that in just a little bit here. But a wise man can control his emotions. And it's very hard not to take a rebuke personally. If somebody tells me what I'm doing wrong, my first response is to act, is to not accept it and to get angry. And this was a challenge to me. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. It's very hard not to take a rebuke personally and to totally ignore it. And you know what? You have to think things through and you have to make a decision before it happens in order not to do that, I believe. You have to decide beforehand. If somebody comes to me, and I really don't like preaching messages like this because then it usually happens to me. I have to live it out. Often we have to live out what we preach. But I do believe, as I was thinking about this and processing this, we need to think about this ahead of time. We need to be decided ahead of time. If somebody comes to me and tells me my faults, that I'm going to listen. I'm going to take it with a group. And again, it makes a huge difference how they come. It's going to be easy when they come with love and compassion, but it's not going to be so easy when they're doing it to knock you down. And the question I had to ask, and I have to ask you, are you sinless? Is there any sin in your life? Has anyone ever confronted you about it? And as I was thinking about this, we don't do a good job of that in a kind and gentle way of confronting each other, exhorting each other, admonishing one another. And if somebody has confronted you, what's been your reaction to that? I don't like the word confronted, maybe. I'd talk to you about it. Because often we look at this as a very negative thing. We look at it as, because often it doesn't happen in a very nice way. Just like I wait to discipline my children until I'm way too upset and I don't do it well. It's the same way we address, because we don't want to hurt somebody else's feelings. But finally it gets to be too much and then we blow up. And that's often when we talk about this, or when I talk about this, that's what comes to my mind is when somebody comes to me or comes to someone else in a harsh and angry way. Being told our faults is not a fun thing. But tell a wise man his faults and he will love you. It tells a lot about a person. If you can tell somebody their faults, and they don't get upset, they don't get angry, and they listen. That takes a person with lots of wisdom. How many of you love the man that rebukes you or the spouse that tells you your faults? We have a tendency to do that, don't we? Do we listen? Do we get upset? Do we get angry? But in all honesty, God still knows what's best. And the best way to grow is to know your faults. It's the only way you can improve those things that are holding you back. I had to think about it, an example. So you have somebody that's a great basketball player, and this is unrealistic, but he shoots 90%. Shoots 90%. Great basketball player. But he can't dribble the ball. But everybody tells him, you're just the greatest player. You shoot 90%, but he can't dribble the ball down the court. If you never tell him, you're great, your shooting's awesome, but you know you can't dribble the ball for nothing. Hopefully you say it maybe a little nicer than that. But you help the man figure out that he can't dribble the ball. He will become a much better basketball player because of it. And the same thing in our life. Are there things that we see that people are struggling with? And sometimes they need to be encouraged in those things, admonished in those things, in order to become a better person. If only your good things, if only your good qualities are promoted, and your bad habits, the things that you struggle with are hidden away, will you become a better person? It's the question I had to ask myself. So the wise man wants to learn. The wise man, as David said, let the righteous strike me. It shall be a kindness. Well, I don't really look at those things as kindness. But yet I believe if we look at it as God wants us to look at, we would see them as a kindness. Let him rebuke me. It shall be as an excellent oil. Let my head not refuse it. So I want to look at the wise man. Give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man and he will increase in learning. So what did David do? David, again, we saw the example of what he prayed, but we also see his example of living that out. What did David do when Nathan confronted him about his sin with Bathsheba? He confessed. He repented. 2 Samuel 12:13 says, so David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And what was Herod's reaction with John the Baptist? Same situation. Very close, very similar. Herod had taken his brother's wife. John the Baptist came to him and said, that is not allowed. You should not do that. What did he do? He beheaded John the Baptist. Matthew 4:14-5. For Herod had laid hold of John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had said to him, it is not lawful for you to have her. And although he wanted to put him to death, he feared the multitude, because they counted him as a prophet. He wanted to kill him. The wise man. Give instruction to a wise man, he will be still wiser. Proverbs 17:10 says, rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows on a fool. Proverbs 3:12, for whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father, the son whom he delights. Give instruction to a wise man, he will be still wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. I want to talk just a little bit about the wise rebuker. We look at that as something that's not the greatest thing in the world to be. And often I think it is because it's done incorrectly and it's done without love and without compassion. Proverbs 25:12 says, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear. Proverbs 28:23, he who rebukes a man will find more favor afterward than he who flatters with the tongue. Maybe not up front, maybe not right when it happens, but afterward than he who flatters. So easy to flatter people. But the wise rebuker has to be filled with love and compassion for those around him. Otherwise, any good from the rebuke will be overlooked and ignored. And like I said earlier, when I think of rebuke, I think of somebody just laying into me. That's how I look. That's often how I picture that. And that is not a wise rebuker. And too often we hold back until we're very upset. And often we can come across, or people can come across, as very condescending or holier than thou. And that's not what the wise rebuker does. The wise rebuker is the man that comes alongside, shares that he loves you, and shares with you in compassion. We see an example that of Paul rebuking Peter. And we don't read that Peter got mad. As I was thinking about this, and I was looking through the text, like, where's Peter's response? But we don't see a response from Peter to Paul's rebuke in Galatians 2, verse 11. But when Peter came to Antioch, I had to oppose him to his face, for what he did was very wrong. When he first arrived, he ate with the Gentile believers who were not circumcised. But afterward, when some friends of James came, Peter would not eat with the Gentiles anymore. He was afraid of criticism from those people, from these people who insisted on the necessity of circumcision. As a result, other Jewish believers followed Peter's hypocrisy, and even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy. When I saw that they were not following the truth of the gospel message, I said to Peter in front of all the others, since you, a Jew by birth, have discarded the Jewish laws and are living by like a Gentile, why are you not trying to make these Gentiles? Why are you now trying to make these Gentiles follow the Jewish traditions? So he rebuked Peter, did it publicly. I think that is appropriate in the right place and the right time. I think probably most of the time, privately would be more appropriate. But we see here Paul doing that. And Peter, we see no negative response from Peter when that happened. So the seven attributes of a wise man. We're going to look at the seven attributes of a wise man that go along with these. And these are verses from Proverbs, mostly. A few Psalms sprinkled in here and there about the attributes of a wise man. A wise man will seek wise counsel. And as we saw, Proverbs 1:5 says, a wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Notice this is the opposite of Proverbs 15:12. A scoffer does not love one who corrects him, nor will he go to the wise. Proverbs 1 tells us, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. That means he'll go to the wise. We're talking about godly wisdom. He will go to those that are filled with godly wisdom for counsel. Proverbs 19:20, listen to counsel and receive instructions that you may be wise in your latter days. Psalm 1:1, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the paths of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Proverbs 13:10, by pride comes nothing but strife, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Proverbs 13:20, he who walks with the wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. I'm going to just off on a tangent here just a little bit. One of the things that I struggle with, and as I was reading this and thinking about pondering on this, that the wise man will seek the counsel of the wise, something that I've seen people do over the years, call it friendship evangelism. And I think it has its place, but I struggle with it just a little bit. And if a non-Christian comes to me and is attracted to me, wants to be my friend, because he wants to be a Christian, I think that's different than for me to make a friendship with a non-Christian to introduce him to Christ. There's a difference there. He's coming to me. I'm not going to him. Too often, I see the person seeking the relationship as the one that's going to be changed. The one that's seeking the relationship is the one that's going to be changed. Because I want to be his friend, therefore I will do what he wants to do or she wants to do instead of the other way around. So if there's somebody coming to me and saying, I want to know more about the Christian life, they're seeking, they're coming to you. Great, but if I'm going to a totally non-Christian and want to try to become his friend to introduce him to Christ, I think there's some dangers there. That doesn't mean we don't do anything with a non-Christian. It doesn't mean we don't necessarily associate with them. But to become a close friend with a non-Christian in order to influence them for Christ seems very dangerous to me. You know, Jesus sat and ate with sinners. You see that all the time. But it never says that they were his close friends until after they accepted him. After they accepted him, after they repented of their sins, we see some of them that stayed with him and that he was close to. But it never says that they were his close friends while they still lived in sin. The aspect of friendship evangelism that worries me the most is when people say, I need to become like them in order to have a voice in their life. It scares me. If you want to call them out of that life, why would you want to become like them? And if you can be like them, why do they need to change? Just some questions I have as I look at that. And what brought that all about is, if I become like those whom I spend time with, who am I spending my time with? Just a caution that I see with friendship evangelism. Love to talk to people. There's some other things. I've got other thoughts about that, but we're not, for the sake of time, we're not going to go down that road. Again, talking about a wise man will seek wise counsel. And going along with this, 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Proverbs 15:22, without counsel, plans go awry. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Proverbs 15:31, the ear that hears the rebuke of life will abide among the wise. Again, opposite from the scoffer who wants nothing to do with the wise. As I was pondering this, everybody knows Elon Musk. He's not a Christian in any way, shape, or form. But I was pondering on his very intelligent and the businesses that he runs. And so I'll get to the point why he came up in my process of thinking about this, about counsel. So I was thinking about, he's very smart, but how can he do all the things that he's doing? He's developed a brand new car company, Tesla. Most of us know what that is, which is brand new technology, brand new product. Everything's new. Everything's kind of got to be invented as it goes along. He's relaunching a space exploration. Again, the same thing. New technology, massive amounts of data that have to be processed. He has a boring business that drills tunnels for transportation. Huge, massive. Again, all this is brand new technology that nobody has done before. And I'm going, how can one man do all this? He's developing a worldwide web service, Starlink, where he's got thousands of satellites in space, wants to provide internet to the whole world, no matter where you're at. Again, brand new technology, all has to be invented as you go. This is the one I did not know. This is the one that scares me. He's developing brain implants that communicate with phones and computers. Again, brand new technology, brand new. Everything has to be developed and invented as it goes along. So, as I was thinking about this, how can one person do all this? Because I work in a company, and I'm going, the company I work in is pretty much, it's been around for years. There's not lots of new technology being invented. It's been done over and over and over. And it's hard to keep good employees. It's hard to keep track of everything. And here he's got six brand new technologies, brand new things going. He's inventing things that's going. There's no way he's doing the work himself. My point is, he is very good at seeking worldly wisdom and counsel to do all this research, to do all this technology. He's a brilliant man, no doubt, but he can't be running these businesses all on his own. That means he has a lot of smart people work for him, from development to implementation to human resources. He has to be seeking out and listening to lots of knowledgeable people in order to make these businesses work. And I believe the same is true in a successful Christian. He's seeking godly counsel, not worldly wisdom. We're not in the business, but we're seeking godly wisdom. We're seeking people that are that are living victorious lives. We're seeking them out. We're listening to them. We're listening. What helped you? What made you strong in this situation? What was your downfall? What did you fall for? All those things that we can learn from those that have gone before us and walked the faith and won. Those are the people that we want to be gathering information from, getting our notes from, talking to, and getting wise counsel. A wise man will seek wise counsel. A wise man brings joy to his family. Proverbs 10:1. The Proverbs of Solomon. So here's where the Mother's Day things comes in, guys. So if you want to give your mom a great Mother's Day, be a wise son and a wise daughter. Proverbs 10:1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. Proverbs 13:1. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Again, the scoffer does not listen to rebuke. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. Proverbs 23:24. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. A wise man has strength. A wise man scales the city of the mighty and brings down the trusted stronghold. A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. We have wisdom. We have wisdom. A wise man has the strength to run the race, the Christian race, victoriously. A wise man scales the city of the mighty. It's one man against the city. This is similar to one we had before. A wise man will gain knowledge. A wise man will gain knowledge. Wise people store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Proverbs 10:8, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. See there again, the wise heart will receive commands, will listen to those that have wise counsel. Proverbs 10:17, he who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses correction goes astray. Do we see now why David said, the man that strikes me, the man that tells me my faults, I want to know. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses correction goes astray. Proverbs 16:23, the heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips. Proverbs 18:15, the heart of the prudent acquires knowledge and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. Proverbs 21:11, when the scoffer is punished, the simple is made wise. But when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. Proverbs 22:17, incline your ear and hear the words of the wise and apply your heart to my knowledge. A wise man reaps the rewards of wisdom. Proverbs 21:20, there is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but the foolish man squanders it. Proverbs 3:35, the wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the legacy of fools. The wise shall inherit glory. Proverbs 14:3, the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. The reward of wisdom says the lips of the wise will preserve them, will keep them from those dangers, keep them from those things that will tear them down, bring them down, discourage them, make them to fall. Proverbs 14:16, a wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident. A wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident. A reward of wisdom is to not fall into those traps, not have those things hanging over our past, because we were able to see them and depart from them, walk around them. A wise man fears and departs from evil, avoids it, goes around it. But the fool rages and is self-confident, says, I can do this, and I won't reap the benefits of participating in things that are evil. Fool says, I can do those things and I won't suffer the consequences. But a wise man fears and departs from those. It's a reward that we have that we often don't look at. A wise man has control over himself. Proverbs 29:8, scoffers set a city aflame. But wise men turn away wrath. I had to think about what was happening in the last 2 years. Minnesota, all the riots. Portland, just came from there. Portland, all the riots that were going on. And I had to think about this. This kind of made me smile. Say, God knows. Man hasn't changed in thousands and thousands of years. Scoffers set a city aflame. And we see that. We see people rebelling against God, scoffing against the morals that God has put in place, those things that God has put in place, scoffing against those, and the city goes up in flames. But a wise man turneth away wrath. A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. A wise man has control over himself. Through the power of the gospel, through the power of Jesus Christ, not on our own. All of this is not on our own. It's through the gospel, through the power of Christ, that a wise man has strength, that a wise man can gain knowledge, that a wise man reaps the rewards of wisdom, that a wise man brings joy to his family. All those things come by knowing Jesus Christ, not on our own strength. And last of all, a wise man heals. Proverbs 16:14, as messengers of death is the king's wrath, but a wise man will appease it. You know, when a king is mad, basically, you're dead. But it says a wise man will appease that wrath. Proverbs 12:18, there is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. The wise man uses his words and uses his tongue to promote healing, to promote reconciliation. And it all starts with, how do we react? How do we respond? First of all, how do we respond to correction? I think the very first thing is when God prompts us to say that we're sinners. It's probably the very first correction that we see that we need to respond to say, Father, I'm sorry. I love you. I want to follow you. But are we? The challenge for me is a big challenge for me. Am I a wise man? How do I respond to those that rebuke me? That's the part that really stuck out to me the most about this passage. How do I respond? Do I have the heart of God, the heart of David, that I look forward to rebuke, and I don't. But I'm praying that I can have the attitude that I can grow from that if somebody does rebuke me. Do I have friends that love me enough to tell me when I'm doing things wrong? Do I love my friends enough? It's hard. It's hard to do that. It's hard to do that. Family. I think about my family, some of the decisions my family's making. Do I love them enough to tell them, guys, this is not a good place to be, even though they know, to have wisdom in doing that. But the biggest wisdom that I want is to be able to receive that correction and to use it to follow and give more glory to God and follow and be more holy to honor God. Let's stand. We'll have a word of prayer. Father, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for your word. Lord, I thank you for your encouragement. I thank you for your straight words. Lord, again, I give you praise that you don't hide anything from us. You shoot it straight. Father, you tell us what you want from us. And Lord, we often make it difficult and hard to understand because we don't want to do what your word says. And Lord, I pray this morning that we can follow you and to love your word and to dig into it. Lord, as we go about life, Lord, I pray that we can seek wise counsel. Lord, to each one of us, that we can seek those that have walked the faith before us, those that have had the victory. Lord, that we can seek them out and ask them for help and ask them for wisdom. Lord, that you have given them. Lord, so that we don't have to make those same mistakes. Lord, I pray that we can take the rebuke that comes our way and use it to become more sanctified. Lord, to become more like what you want us to be. Lord, I pray that as we go this week that we can be a shining light to the world. Lord, the world seems to be becoming darker and darker place. And Lord, that only means the light will shine brighter and brighter, Lord, if we are the light. And Lord, help us to be that light as we go about our daily walk of life. In Jesus' name, amen.